Okay, now would you proceed to call the roll and we'll start the regular agenda.
Saltzman?
Here.
Novick?
Here.
Fritz?
Here.
Fish?
Here.
Hales?
Here. Okay, we have some communication items up front. Could we take those in order, please, Carla?
Item 709, request of A. Rio Sr. to address council regarding year-round shelter for women.
Good morning. Welcome.
Good morning. My name is Art Rio Sr., and for just a moment, I'd like everybody to stand up for a moment of silence. The moment of silence is for all the homeless throughout the world that we've lost, both men, women, children, from whatever it is, from the poverty, the homelessness, no food, no nurture, you know, anything that you can think of, but
thank you.
So today I'm here to talk to you about a year-long shelter for women. Yes, I am a man. I am here advocating for women. My mom is a woman. Your mom's a woman. But we also have to look at it. There's our moms, our daughters, our aunts, our cousins, our nieces out there on the streets that need this help. We've heard too many problems out here on the streets. We advocate every day, from young, old, new folks that come out to the streets from different cities, and we know it's a problem, but also they have to find a place that's going to be safe and secure. And we need the help from you, Charlie. Not Mr. Hales, not Mayor. Charlie. You know, I know I've talked to Amanda Fritz. I haven't got to talk to Nick Fish or Dan Saltzman or Steve Novak as much, but still, you got to understand, I'm a man up here looking for that safe place. We need the help. You got to understand that you have a lot of women in here that stay at Right to Dream too. If you close them, where do they go? I'm here in solidarity with them. They're in solidarity with us, but we have to sit down at the table, and we need to do it soon. Winter's coming. There's too many empty buildings. We need to talk, and we need to talk soon. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate your advocacy.
Item 710, request of Sherry Bentley to address council regarding year-round shelter for women.
Bentley, you here? Let's call her again later if she's outside.
Item 711, request of Glenn Kirkendall to address council regarding violence towards women, opening shelters, provide child care, and public jobs.
And here? Okay, again, call again if... Oh, here he is. Good morning.
Thank you, City Council, Mayor, for allowing me to be here. My name is Lynn Kirkendall. I work with the Freedom Socialist Party and a radical woman. I'm also a rank-and-file member of the United Food and Commercials Workers Union, Local 555. I'm here to support the year-round shelter for women because the status of society is recognized by the way women are treated. And what is happening in our city is abysmal, especially when our city closes down schools, closes down buildings, but does not make any of these empty buildings available for the homeless in this community. I think we should not use the word homeless. I think we should use the word houseless instead. I think this is city property. I'm a taxpayer. Let's open up these empty buildings.
Thank you very much. Thanks for coming.
Item 712, request of Janae Dubai to address council regarding homeless women's safety and adding more safe shelter.
Okay. Jeannie here? Okay, and let's go to the last one and circle back and see if Sherry Bentley has arrived.
Item 713, request of Shasta Smith to address council regarding a year-round shelter for women.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I have something to read. Myth one, there are not many homeless women in comparison to men. Reality, women, including transgender women who are extremely vulnerable to the streets, as less visible to the homeless population due to a variety of complex factors, including continuing to stay with abusers, traffickers, due to lack of options, not accessing general homelessness service due to harassment, going to great lengths to hide their homelessness due to being targeted of a predator. 50% women have chances of sexually assault for her first night living on the streets. Due to the above factors, many methods of trafficking, homelessness, one-night counts are not reliable, indicating the number of women who are unsafe and unsheltered. Myth number two, there are more shelters and services for women. There are fewer homeless shelters for women than men. While there are a number of slightly shelters for men in Portland, there is only one nightly emergency shelter for women. The shelters is currently operating on a waiting list. Myth number three, a woman or any domestic violence survivor is in danger will be guaranteed safety. Reality, domestic violence shelters are always full. One in Portland recently shut down. There are occasionally hotel vouchers available, but more than often not. There are no immediately shelters options available for survivors ready to flee from their abusers. Myth number four, women with children homeless in the domestic violence situations automatically receive shelter or hotel vouchers. Families are frequently turned away from services due to lack of space or children of their age. What I'm asking is for, we need a shelter space for women. Women out here are being targeted no matter what. You have a lot of empty buildings, like we've all said. Just give us one. We have volunteers that are willing to go in there and advocate and sit with them so they're not being abused.
Thank you very much. Thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah, let's just make sure that, see if Sherry Bentley. Did Sherry arrive, Sherry Bentley? I know Commissioner Saltzman wanted to respond, but I want to make sure if she did arrive, we gave her a chance to speak, but it doesn't look like it. So, Dan, please.
Well, thank you. I just wanted to say, as Housing Commissioner, I do share many of the concerns you have raised about safe housing for women. As you mentioned, women are a particularly vulnerable population, and the most recent homeless count indicated a jump in the number of homeless women in Portland. The concerns that you've expressed this morning are shared by me, and I have been working with the Housing Bureau on specific proposals to add more year-round shelter and other housing options for women. I expect to be adding more housing for women before the end of this year. So thank you for your ear.
Thanks, Dan, for working on that. Thank you all.
May I comment from there?
Please.
So I missed the last two city councils. I missed the last two city council hearings because I was in England visiting my mother, and I had the opportunity to walk for an hour in London, which is a city of 8.3 million people. I saw two people living outside in that, and there are fewer people in the entire United Kingdom living outside than there are in the city of Portland. And the taxes are a lot higher there. They get a lot more support from the federal government for folks who are out of work and who are needing housing. We've got to recognize that this is a national issue that we cannot solve here in Portland. However, as Commissioner Saltzman has said, we share the urgency of finding more safe shelter for women. I am also very interested in finding options for the Right to Dream 2 model and to see how we can do that. So I personally am also very committed to supporting Commissioner Saltzman and to talking with Mayor Adams and to working with all the members of the council, because we agree that this is an urgent crisis that we all need to work together. And so I appreciate the cooperative way that you have been coming to council to share the facts. Thank you for myth versus reality. That's really helpful for people to know, and it's helpful for them to see, for us to see you, and for the people on TV to see you here as real people with names and faces and lives and hearts and minds and guts. And so thank you very much for what you're doing in highlighting this issue and also being willing to work with us on it, because I know from the nods that you recognize that we have been trying really hard. And indeed, later today on the council agenda, we'll be hearing about $15 million in grants to help support people experiencing homelessness. So it's not that we haven't been doing anything. I think that the challenges are so great that we can't solve them all, but we're going to keep trying and keep solving more and more day by day and week by week. Thank you very much for being here.
Good. Thank you. Thank you. Thanks very much, and thank you both. Okay, we are ready to move to our consent calendar. I don't believe we have any items that have been pulled from consent.
We have 721 being pulled.
Yeah, okay. I'd like to pull 721 for regular agenda.
Okay. Yes, okay. All right, that's right. Sorry, I forgot that request. Okay, the balance of the consent calendar then, no other requests for pulling items other than 721. So let's take a roll call on the balance of the agenda.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye. And would you like to take that now or wait till the end of the calendar? So,
yeah, we can take it now.
Let's take it now. Let's take item 721 now then if we're ready to proceed with that.
Authorize 20 subrecipient contracts totaling $15,768,128 for the provision of services in support of ending homelessness and providing affordable housing.
Commissioner Saltzman.
Thank you, Mayor. This is a very significant investment in services to address homelessness in our city. And the Portland City Council, by approving this today, is making a significant commitment. The item before us this morning provides more than $15 million to our community partners to provide a variety of different services to address homelessness and provide affordable housing. The specific funding allocation was approved by the council during our fiscal 13-14 budget process, and I'd now like to invite Danielle Ledesma and Sally Erickson from the Portland Housing Bureau to give a short overview of some of the investments that we are making today.
Good morning.
Good morning. My name's Danielle Ledesma, like Commissioner Saltzman said, and I'm from the Portland Housing Bureau. And on behalf of our director, Tracy Manning, who is at a national conference about ending homelessness in Washington, D.C., we want to first extend our thanks to the entire council for your support of our work at the Housing Bureau, and particularly this year's budget. Like Commissioner Saltzman said, this set of contracts is an extension of the work that we did with you together in the budget. And what we're doing is we're authorizing the renewal of contracts with our high-performing partners in the community, totaling over $15.7 million. And this is, like many of you know, our budget comprises of more than general fund, but also federal funds. So this is a mix of funding, including general fund, tax increment financing, CDBG, Housing Investment Fund, and a federal Healthy Homes Production Grant. These contracts support the work of three of our investment priorities at the Portland Housing Bureau. The first being moving people quickly from homelessness to permanent housing, while preventing families from losing their homes. The second is helping Portlanders from communities of color buy a home or keep the home they already own, and provide a safety net that includes shelter and other short-term help for low-income Portlanders who are homeless or at risk of homelessness. And we believe at the Housing Bureau that, and the work of our partners, that there's a wide array of interventions that we want to make sure that we work to and what we support to ensure that folks not only have a place to sleep at night, but also can access the opportunities of our great city. And so you'll see a wide spectrum of different types of work here in addition to the work around ending homelessness. So I will highlight a few of those other contracts, and Sally Erickson, who is our manager of our ending homelessness team, will talk about those. We're funding six contracts that meet our goal under our third investment priority, which is helping Portlanders from communities of color either buy a home or keep the home they're already in. We are funding a collaborative of culturally specific organizations to provide homeownership counseling to over 700 households. We are funding four organizations to provide home repair, weatherization, and homeownership retention services to over 1,300 households. We're serving very low-income homeowners who are able to access our resources to help remove lead paint, mold, really fire life safety issues in their home, and access funding that wouldn't otherwise be available. Additionally, this set of contracts also represents passing through of Community Development Block Grant to the Portland Development Commission to support the Economic Prosperity Program. And their program will serve over 1,170 individuals, including microenterprise development and both adult and youth workforce development, getting youth and low-income adults trained and ready for work and connecting them with jobs, which we know has a critical connection to being able to support housing. And then we also have one contract that is working with a nonprofit provider who works with housing developers to provide technical assistance so that they can finance and develop affordable homes that are sorely needed in our community. So I'm going to turn it over to Sally Erickson now.
Great. Thanks, Danielle.
Thank you. Hi, my name is Sally Erickson. I lead the Housing Access and Stabilization Team at the Portland Housing Bureau. I wanted to highlight some of the contracts that our bureau holds and manages that support our community's plan to address homelessness. That plan, A Home for Everyone, which City Council, the County Commission, and Home Forward approved earlier this spring, is currently underway and being implemented, and part of the way we implement that is through these contracts. I and my staff go after every possible federal dollar for housing and services to bring additional funding to this community beyond what the city is able to provide through general funds. As Danielle mentioned, some of these contracts support our Bureau's strategic plan as well as a Home for Everyone, our community's plan. And using both federal and local funding, we're providing services in four major ways. Through homelessness prevention, which is the most cost-effective way to reduce homelessness and ultimately end it. Through supportive housing for people with disabling conditions, families, and individuals. Through emergency services like winter shelter, severe weather shelter, youth shelter, and shelter for men and women, and also access services like 211 Info, our benefits eligibility specialists team, the Street Roots resource guide. Under the prevention category, more than $3 million would be going out to a variety of organizations that provide short-term rent assistance to prevent eviction and to help move people quickly from the streets and emergency shelters into homes. The programs that we fund are tremendously effective, and after more than 12 months, more than 80% of households are still in housing. So it's a nationally recognized approach to ending homelessness in our community. Supportive housing is critical for people with permanent disabling conditions, like major health conditions, cancer, heart disease, diabetes, as well as HIV and AIDS, as well as people with disabling mental health conditions. So we fund nearly $6 million of supportive housing programs that are provided by Cascade AIDS Project, Cascadia Behavioral Health, Central City Concern, JOIN, and others. In emergency services, our community and the city directs nearly $4 million to emergency shelter for youth, women, and men. And that includes year-round shelter as well as winter shelter and severe weather shelter that we call during the winter when it gets particularly cold outside. And finally, our access services are key for people to get connected with the resources that are available. So through 211 Info, which is a great partner in our community, the Street Roots Resource Guide, tenant education programs like RentWell. We're hoping to connect people that are low income and homeless with services that are available in the community. So that's the overview, and we're available for any questions.
Great. Thank you, Danielle and Sally.
Thank you. Questions from council?
I have a couple. Just excellent presentation as always. Sally, remind us, what's the relative percentage of federal dollars versus local dollars that we invest in ending homelessness, and to underscore the point, what I really want to get at is the level of local support for the effort, because we're seeing a reduction in our federal dollars. So just ballpark, do you know the percentage?
Ballpark, about a third of funds for ending homelessness programs are from federal sources, and the remainder are local general fund.
Local general fund. Mm-hmm. And the reason, Mayor, I think that's important to highlight is that we would not be making progress in getting people into permanent homes if we weren't using local funds. But the reality is this is a national problem. And as Commissioner Fritz noted, in most other civilized countries, there's a strong federal policy where dollars are made available to localities to house victims of domestic violence, veterans who've come back from war and need a helping hand. Increasingly, the way it works is the federal government is cutting back and local government is having to pick up the slack. And I think it's also worth noting that in this year's budget, the only bureau that got 100% of what they asked for was the Housing Bureau. So the city is investing a lot of taxpayer money in this, but the federal government's reduction in funding means we're going to have to add more money just to stay even. And long term, that's not stable. I mean, that's not a sustainable path. The other thing I just want to acknowledge is that we talk about a 10-year plan to end homelessness. And Sally Erickson is nationally recognized for the work that she and her team are doing to address this crisis. We did not choose that phrase. In fact, if I had the power, we would take the 10-year plan to end homelessness out of our vocabulary. It was, in fact, the federal government that required, as a condition of receiving federal funds, that cities and counties establish 10-year plans. And I want to be very clear. Today, there are 50,000 unsheltered people in Los Angeles and almost as many unsheltered people in New York. We are not going to end homelessness in 10 years. And as long as we have an economy that is increasingly putting people out of work, as long as we have a crisis where we're seeing foreclosures putting people on the street, as long as we don't have the services to provide women in need and distress and families in need, we will see more homelessness. But I want people to be clear, we did not come up with the idea of a 10-year plan to end homelessness. And I think it borders on false advertising to say that in 10 years we can end homelessness. But through Sally's work and through a community-based plan, we have, over the last 8 years, moved 7,000 people from the street into homes. And people often say, well, but they're still homeless. You've failed. I would say no. There's 7,000 human beings that now have a roof over their head because of this plan. And this plan has the potential to continue to make progress. But clearly, without a strong federal partner, we cannot solve this problem alone. And it is, I don't know if you saw the newspaper today, But the Republicans in Congress are now proposing, if the president does not withdraw Obamacare, to further gut the social safety net in this country. So to get health care reform, they are holding hostage programs which serve people. And that's where the outrage should be focused, not on communities that are stepping up and using local tax dollars to fill the gap. They should be outraged at federal priorities which result in a retreat in supporting programs like ending homelessness. And if you want to know the math, just remember that it costs us as federal taxpayers about $100 billion a year in foregone revenue through something called the mortgage interest deduction, which is the largest subsidy of middle-class people in their homes. And we spend as a nation less than $50 billion to address housing. Less than $50 billion to address the housing needs of our entire country. And yet we give a $100 billion subsidy to people who own homes. That's where people should be focused, not on local governments like Multnomah County and the city of Portland that are doing their very best with limited resources to address this problem. And, Mayor, again, I thank you for prioritizing housing in your budget, the only bureau that got 100% of its ad package.
Thanks, Commissioner. Thank you. So other questions or comments from the council at this point? Great presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And then do you have some folks signed up to testify on this item?
I have at least three. I have Joe Walsh, Lightning, and Mike Morin. Please come on up.
Morning.
I didn't have a sign up because it was cool. I can do it. I'll let you go after them.
I get you one way or the other. My name is Joe Walsh. I represent Individuals for Justice. I take great exception to what you just said, Commissioner Fish. We cannot change the federal government, but you can change the way you do business. And you do business really in a crappy way. You pat yourself You pat yourself on the back by spending $15 million on a homeless problem. The homeless problem in Portland, like every other city, the money that you allocated is absorbed by administrations. Then nobody here can tell you what the percentage that you spend of that $15 million on administration salaries, benefits. You had this great presentation today with two top leaders, but one was on a junket, paid for by your $15 million. So I ask you, why do you not set up a committee that includes the homeless? Yeah. This is not new. We've been asking this for a long time. If you want to fight a fire, you go ask a fireman. If you want to find out about the police, you ask Chief Reed. If you want to know about homeless, ask the damn homeless.
And falsely arrested. Repeatedly.
In your $15 million, you are giving Multnomah County $1 million. Can someone explain to me why the city would give Multnomah County $1 million under the homeless bill when they have more money than we do? They brag about how their budget is flush with money. Because, but you're giving them $1 million for what? Can anybody answer me that?
To lock people up.
Not you. Would you answer me that, Amanda? Why are we giving Multnomah County $1 million? For what?
$2 million, Joe.
Why don't you finish your statement, and then we'll direct you to people that can answer your questions.
Well, of course you don't want to answer anything, Charlie. That's your style. This $15 million should be doubled. If you have one person on the street that you ran off the streets yesterday at 7 o'clock in the morning, that's what you did. You said, we have to clean the streets. And you ran everybody off around the council because your business people said to you, oh, Mr. Mayor, they look so horrible. You know what we're going to do? Starting next week, we're going to stand in front of restaurants with signs saying, feed your faces, don't care about the homeless. And you watch the phone calls you get, Charlie, because every week we're going to do it. Thank you.
Mr. Walsh, if you want answers to your questions, including what funds were used to send the director of the Bureau to Washington, D.C. for a national meeting, which were not these funds, or
will they
what
tax
the,
money?
Hang on, I'm answering your question.
They tax money?
Never mind. If you're not interested in the facts, there are people here who are willing to give them to you.
Okay.
They're here from the Housing Bureau. They can tell you the percentage of overhead in each of those programs if you actually want to know that.
All right, but let them say this. Those programs allocate funds for other programs that allocate funds for other programs, and every one of those programs have an overhead. That's the figure I want to know. I want to know, when you get down to the person on the street or needs the money, how much percentage do we give them?
I think you can find that out from asking the staff that are here. Okay, go ahead, Lightning. Go ahead.
My name is Lightning. Housing is the solution. I have one issue here that I do have a problem with in front of City Hall. Do not create a smear campaign against the homeless. It will not benefit anybody in this city. It benefits nobody. To improve the lives of the homeless needs to be the number one concern, the number one priority, not creating a smear campaign to push people down. It doesn't benefit anybody in this city. I commend Portland Housing Bureau for the funding that they are doing today. I will not go against that. We need more funding, and it has been stated.
Sir, I'm sorry. You need to let him finish, okay? Let him finish, please.
As far as the comment, Dana Haynes thinks there was a victory in front of City Hall, I absolutely disagree with you. There is no victory. You cannot take people on the sidewalks and try to push them a couple blocks away. It does not solve the solution. We need to find housing for the people out there that want housing. There's a tremendous amount of people that do. We need to provide the funding, and we need to have one focus and one focus only: improve their lives. Do not create smear campaigns for anybody's benefit. A smear campaign will create backlash. It will fall against everybody in this city. It does not work. The homeless need to have their lives improved. I am appalled at the media out there going along with this. You have the option, and I've talked with many of you. You don't have to do a story that smears the homeless. It doesn't benefit your news crews. It doesn't benefit you. It doesn't benefit the city. We need to uplift the people currently sleeping on the sidewalks. That is the number one priority of this city. We need more federal funding. We need more local support. And we need the Portland Business Alliance to quit trying to create ways to drive them out of this city and support the homeless. Thank you.
Go ahead.
And I have a conceptual thing called People's Equity Union United Community Betterment. The federal Gordian knot needs to be cut, for one. We need to change the Federal Reserve Bank to allocate money based on need and inclusive community betterment. And I mean everybody. It's coming on winter. And how many of you have ever been homeless? See, and how many of these people that were testifying, you know, these overweight women coming in and all dressed up like they're partying.
Go ahead, but let's not care.
Oh yeah, that's who they are. But anyway, you don't know.
Hey, sir, finish your statement. Sir, finish your statement and don't be characterizing other people.
Well, we could get in the details about how you're spending your money. One is, I'll start right with Central City Concern, and the only decent thing where they're located is their offices, and then you have your landscape planning architects building $500,000 per unit stuff on both sides of town, and like some dude said earlier, there's a whole lot of buildings standing idle. And you ain't doing nothing about it. Now, if you had a proper REACH Community Development Corporation, if you had the proper money going to them, we could probably do something. What about noise pollution? Like Lightning was talking about I saw it on the news. This is they said they were people with works and this and the other stuff like that. Bullshit. If they had anything, they had soda pop cans and cigarettes and alcohol, which you all just look the other way with the distributors and the retailers of those poisons. You got transition projects. You create the need for people to go through alcoholism and you make big money off it. And then you hire counties to lock us up and torture us in your so-called justice center, and false arrest. And what recourse do I have for false arrest? And I'm living in a damn hotel on my savings, the Georgia Hotel, the second cheapest hotel in town. And I've had my stuff stolen by the police. The police were complicit. I got it all right. And if you don't think so, then let's talk about it afterwards.
Thank you. Anybody else?
Yes, we have two more. Mary Eng and Barry Jo Stull.
Hi, Gal. I'd like to say a few things.
I have to sign up, sir.
Have you signed up?
Yeah, I'm signed up.
Okay, good.
Freedom of speech, right?
Go ahead, Mary.
Go ahead. No, you go, Mary. I insist.
Wait a second. She's got to turn your microphone on. Just a second.
Okay.
Hey, wait a second. Carla, could you turn? I'm sorry, she's talking to somebody. Mary, hang on a second. Hey, Carla, could you turn the microphone on? It got turned off. Thanks. There we go. Okay, now we're ready. Thanks.
Hi, City Council. Great to see you. I'm glad your trip to England was great. I love England. If you can ever hook me up with citizenship, I would like to move to a country that doesn't criminalize poverty. So I'm really thrilled about the new birth in the royal family. You know, there's my biggest hero is Zach Goldsmith. I saw him deliver a speech on torture, indefinite detention, extraordinary rendition, Guantanamo, that really cool hacker. What's his name? Somebody help me. England? Hacker? He's got Asperger's. He's neurodiverse. He's like a total genius. He hacked into NASA. Oh, okay. Anyway, to stay focused, Zach Goldsmith is talking about green infrastructure for Europe. And guess what's awesome is we're kind of on the same page. We're kind of ahead of the game on some of the green stuff. But the poverty stuff, we're like stuck in the dark ages. So I just want you to get to know my friend Ben Pickering. He was blinded 20 years ago when a log took out his eye, cut up his skull. He recently had an attempted homicide. He survived in the state of Washington, and he made it down for some Portland police brutality. They broke his sternum, shattered a part of his elbow, and bashed his head into the ground as they said, "Don't be a pussy, you can handle it. Americans with Disabilities Act, don't be a pussy in America. You can handle it if you're blind." Very dark, misogynistic, homophobic hate crime. So we started a group called Transgender the Courts, and we went to court in drag because they tried to say it's a crime to be blind in public.
Hey, let her speak. You got to speak. Let her speak.
I hope I'm not an overweight woman. Okay. What do you think,
right,
sir?
Wait a minute. Whoa. Okay, sir, you're going to have to leave because you got to speak and you're not letting other people speak.
I'm a former bulimic woman who got my weight under control.
Okay, keep going. I'm sorry you got interrupted.
So anyway, since Ben and I are engaged, I don't want the Portland police to beat him anymore. And if y'all know any Oregon Commission on the Blind people that can help us with the abuse that he's received, it's a little domestic violence mixed with Social Security embezzlement fraud in Portland, Oregon. He's survived on $150 this month, and not to mention a little rudeness from some of the public officials. So I'm negative $400 in the hole. You know, my mom works for the Veterans Administration. She's put us up. Ben's no longer on the streets, so it's a success story. And guess what? Pennsylvania Avenue is all involved. Jonas Geisler is really thrilled that Benjamin is willing to go on Oprah Winfrey, go on the news media. He'll tell his story all day long in any office. I mean, you better ask him, actually. I better not speak for him. Sometimes I say the wrong thing. I think you should talk to the homeless.
Thanks, Mary. Thank you. Okay, just get a little closer to the microphone. Just slide a little to the left there. There you go.
I'm 29 years old, and it's not just here. It's around the world. You know, we are a badass nation. Excuse me, my French. Go on.
That's all right.
Okay.
Could you start by giving us your name, please?
Yes, Benjamin. Yeah. Benjamin Pickering.
Thanks.
Anyway. I see the crime on the street, and it's like, and it grows. You know, I grew up, my mom always watched cops and news, you know, and knew a few things about whatever. That's all we ever kids watched growing up, you know. But I've seen couch surfing out there, running with these cats, you know, and out there and listening to these stories, you know, going to gatherings, you know, and hearing everybody's story, you know, and the things I cannot believe. But, you know, what I do believe, you know, in God we trust, you know, is that, you know, God died on the cross for our sins, you know. The people, you know, up to par, you know, the crime on the streets, you know, it's going up. You know, you see it. It's going. You got to teach people, you know, it's what you put into it is what you get back. You know, it's tender loving care. You know, the people got to know. It's like when you get addicted to something, it's getting addicted to love. It's actually, you know, with respect. You know, you don't walk into your country club, you do, and like, you know, enjoy yourself, like, you know, whether you're on the dance floor doing line dance, that's fun. But But when you enjoy yourself out there with the world, you know, and you share the stuff, it's everywhere you go. I mean, the stuff I can believe, but I mean, the stuff needs to be helped with, you know. And if we can come up to par and get the crime a little bit lesser, and you know, work with people where they understand, you know, where people come from, you know, you got to live that. You know, there's different firms out there where you got, you know, every firm out there from FBI to Navy SEAL to Army, you know, they go out there and they detonate bombs and they save civilians and they go out there and fight crimes and put on suits to take landmines and they fight in crime on the street. But cops is the worst firm out there. I mean, they go out there and they get a statement. That's all they know. And they know the firm of what I mean. I've studied it. I know because I've got cops in the family and I've got different people that know, in parts of my family that did, you know, from Washington all over. I'm from California, but you know, the firm, when they go in there, they study, you know, how to have tactics and how to handle things. But you know, when they will go up and they write their statements down and they go up and they do what you do, sometimes when you go back and investigate your own crime, you know, they just go in there and they take it back to their source, which is they're all they can be, right? But they obey by the badge. But there's some things that just need to be worked on, you know, like getting it in order, getting it straight, you know, like the people. I mean, I'm not, this is just tip of the iceberg, but I have a little bit of say, you know, and it's going to take a little bit more than just to show up right here. But I just have a few things, you know. God bless America anyway.
Thank you. Good morning. Good morning. Go ahead, sir. Good morning. Oops. There we go. Good morning. Just give us your name and proceed.
I was waiting for Carla to get the mic on, that's all. My name is Barry Joe Stull, and I became homeless in 2005 or 2006, however you want to slice it. My nonprofit, Affordable Housing Landlord, Portland Community Reinvestments Initiatives, filed a 30-day no-cause against an express statutory prohibition in August of 2005. I appealed that, found myself locked out when I came home from my day job that provided me with dental care. I actually had medical and dental, and I came home from a dentist appointment. Couldn't get in my apartment. I was locked out in November of 2005. March of 2006, the Court of Appeals ruled I shouldn't have been locked out. That day, the order came out of Salem. The landlord and the Multnomah County Sheriff went in, and the landlord destroyed $15,000 worth of my property. I proved that. In October 2006, the landlord destroyed $4,775 worth of my property. I proved that. 3 years ago, last month, I did two things. I went to court, and Judge Edward Jones ordered that if the landlord cut me a check for $4,775, what was a quarter of what was destroyed in 2006, this was 3 years ago, 2010, even Stephen. In the meantime, I got in my opening appellant's brief, and it was rejected because they changed the rules from 12 font to 13 font. Now, we have a big problem here. Commissioner Fish appointed PCRI onto his Fair Housing Council. In the meantime, knowing all these facts, Police Commissioner Mayor Adams refused to write a police report against Judge Edward Jones, who walks out in front of here, who's still in office, for official misconduct. I can't get the Portland police to write a police report when I'm a crime victim. Last month, I was a crime victim out front. The security cameras weren't on. Now, I was arrested just in 2011, August, October, November, and then in February of 2012. When I went to report that a restraining order that I had was violated, I was arrested because Sergeant Bocciacalupi, standing over here, illegally excluded me from Central Precinct. We have big problems because at the time when I qualified after 2 years for the Housing Authority of Portland, renamed, I couldn't even get into the Central Precinct to get my background check. And then once I did, the Housing Authority of Portland, renamed Home Forward, refused my application based on the arrests. Now, August, October, November, February, not guilty, not guilty, not guilty, not guilty. Last year, I was arrested February, July, 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 and August. We have a big problem here. The problem is corruption and a total lack of accountability.
Thanks very much. Thank you. Anyone else?
Two more.
Hey,
Nan Wigmore and Grace Sylvia.
Okay. Good morning. Good morning. Welcome. Go ahead, ma'am. Good morning. Just give us your name and proceed.
I'm Nan Wigmore, and I can be heard.
Okay.
I left photographs of the vigil behind me there, and so I can get them later. I'd like to tell you, first of all, I'm a great-grandmother. I'm looking forward to my grandchildren, great-grandchildren growing up in a healthy Portland, those that have stayed. Because of problems with our government, my siblings have not all stayed in this country. They left. And those have stayed work as I do. So I wanted to say I worked for the voc rehab, assisting those who were willing and able with help in the Quadrant Southeast mental health system. That was my occupation for a number of years. Those who are willing and able with help become and remain employed. That was my job, and I watched it happen. That department, during another era, another season of cutbacks, was closed. And it was foolish. It was made by bookkeepers. And that's really the primary reason we find people on our streets today. They were getting help before. And that money didn't come back to the city. It was just ended. Program was ended. Because I was paid not by the city, but by Volk Rehab. Now, I'd like to speak to a couple of things in particular. When yesterday you chose, in a rather, I thought, mean way, to put the vigil out of the front of the city hall and Lightning's sacred special spot, which was a piece of art volunteered and kept up by one person, one homeless person who dedicates his days. The candlelight vigil for the last a score of months, it's given hope, not just to the homeless out there, but to people like myself who just walk by. And I watch. I'd stop in and I'd look at the amazing little trinkets, little spiritual items that people would leave. And homeless people kept that neat and in order. And I for the life of me, can't understand why you look over that. So I'm going to move on. I wonder if you realize the number of unemployed, hardworking volunteers sleep on the front steps. I wonder if you have any idea. The poorest, the lonely, and the lost are not lost to themselves and those of us out there. They are lost to the city who has guidance. You're just misguided, in my opinion. And it's corporations. We all know that. You know that. The empty building, someone said, I wonder if you notice how many women and children are out there on the streets trying to get a night's sleep with a roar of engines going by.
Ma'am, I want to ask you to wrap up. You've actually used your time, but I'm giving you some extra time because you're making some great points here. Thank you.
I'll give you part of my time, ma'am.
Thank you. Mr. Fish, you nullified every word you said. It's the attitude when those were torn down. It's the attitude, those sacred spots. Hands-on Portland and the prisoners who helped tear down these structures last night. Those people could be working together with the homeless. We don't have to take one little organization and have them do the work that homeless people could help, because they are the poorest, the loneliest, and the lost. One person said to me back about 2011, "You want to help the poor? Take one of us home. Take one of us home." And I thought about that a lot. And so the next day, I invited somebody to come home. And through this time, we've had maybe 15 people. Some we had to say, no, this won't work. I'm telling you, two of those people work. 2 days a week, they come to town. You've seen them out here. They bring food. They carry that food that's all donated. They cook it. They drive their bicycles 12 miles a day. 12 miles on your bicycle? You know that homeless spend a lot of time just surviving and serving, serving the city without a penny.
Ma'am, I want to ask you to finish your thought. Thank you.
I can stop.
Okay. Thank you very much. Appreciate
Surely.
You being here.
Thank you.
Thank you. That's a hard act to follow, but go ahead.
Yeah, right.
Good morning. Just give us your name.
Hi, my name is Grace Sylvia. I had a question about the $15 million budget. I was wondering how much of that is going to the most cost-effective houseless program in town, which is Right to Dream 2, as far as I can see. As a side note, I'm as somebody who's worked in homeless shelters, I'm extremely impressed with their self-organizing and their stance against bigotry and discrimination in all forms. They're doing an amazing job. And that very kind of self-organizing program could be used for a year-round shelter program for women, or it could be a shelter program supported by one of the agencies. But I have a question. When I heard the testimony that some of the money is already going, there's the emergency winter shelter that's only open for the 6 months in the coldest weather, but we already have an emergency shelter for women. I'm curious which one that is. When SAFES has a wait list, that's not emergency shelter. If somebody is coming off the street, and they're escaping domestic violence or a violent pimp, or they're just escaping maybe a violent family, as so often our queer youth are, and there, especially if a woman's on the streets her first night, she's likely to have, you've heard this again, but a 50% chance of being raped. So we need a year-round emergency shelter for women, and I think we have the resources. There's creative ways, and I think the suggestions before of involving homeless people in creating their own solutions, in making use of more self-organizing, or of making use of some of the programs that we already have that we could extend. I think the emergency shelter is a very low-cost program that gives an amazing bang for the buck. It's incredibly low barrier. Women could walk in. They don't have to be clean or sober. They just can, if they can work in the community, they were welcome to stay. So I really want to encourage people to get back to the point today of figuring out a way to have really true year-round emergency shelter for women. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks for coming.
Hi, my name is Teresa Roberts. Thanks, Carla. I'm studying nonviolent communication. I haven't really internalized it yet, so I cannot tell you what I think of you.
Oh.
You can throw all the money you want to at the homeless problem. But until you show respect, you know, do you have no respect for people, a high percentage of whom have had head injuries, a high percentage of whom are abuse survivor, a high percentage of whom are disabled? You have no respect. If you give grudgingly, you might as well not have given. You are not going to earn any stars for your crown in heaven, nor re-election. You don't listen to us. You listen to Mark Weiner, who ran most of your elections, which I think is a problem that we should have so many people sitting up there whose campaigns were run by the same person and who have such debts. You have plenty of money to try to force Medicaid us with fluoride, which we have four times prior told you we did not want. You have money to ram fast-track reservoirs underground that the citizenry do not want. You do not listen. I come to City Council frequently enough to watch you not listen to citizens. I heard at least 12 citizen groups get up and testify against you accepting Mike Reese's flawed JTTF agreement, but you, three of you, rolled over and you know who you are. You have money for all that overtime that the police spend. You have money to spend appealing the Gallagher-Smith versus the Portland police and pay interest on money that you all agree the victim deserves, delay it going into his hands in a bid for more power for Portland police to tell citizens to move along on the sidewalk. I also saw a recent article in the paper called Another Night in Taser City, where a bouncer on his way home at 2 a.m. when your buses stop running and was trying to get a cab. He's dressed as a bouncer. His girlfriend is in high heels and a party dress. He ends up tased, beaten, and hogtied. Why are we hogtying our citizens? And do you want more power for these bullies, these animals, these... Oh, that's not nonviolent. You take a breath. Winter is coming. We have empty buildings. We have two homeless communities that provide a model for something we can do today. You cannot fast track that. You cannot get people in shelter before it's cold. While that man runs a department that creates arrest records for teachers, nurses, social workers, and people who try to help the homeless, people who try to express their conscience on the streets to get the attention of their fellow citizens because Oregon gets an F in public access to information. And you and the state of Oregon got a D in accountability. Now, I have presented that report to you, and I have not seen any change in your grades.
Thanks for coming. Appreciate you being here. Thanks.
We have two more signed up. Charles Johnson and Nicole Childs. Those are the last two who signed up.
I'm sorry. Did you hear the names?
Charles
called?
I didn't Johnson hear. And Nicole Myself. Childs.
Would you like to speak first? Hey, folks, we got to be able to hear the names of people that are being called. Thank you. Okay, go ahead.
Good morning, counselors. My name, as you probably might recall, is Charles Johnson. Speaking, Ms. Roberts raised some very serious and important issues, but in light of yesterday's activity and the $15 million agenda item number 721 before us, I would like to make a brief comment. The pretext for yesterday's action was the number